topic will be addressing the most favorite asset protection states for trust, dynasty trust. Why do we need to even consider this? Well, the answer is that certain states historically have always been more favorable for purposes of protecting assets than others. The notoriously granddaddy for asset protection states within the U.S. is Delaware. It's been around as a place where corporations have set up businesses, where judges and lawyers have been in on the joke for 100 years. Delaware has always welcomed people who want to run businesses and have some level of protection against creditors and predators in situations that could interrupt their business and maybe for not appropriate causes of action. That is for running businesses. These states as well, such as Delaware, are also typical and expected states for having trust in place. So all of you have created trust on this line. You all know that the purpose of a trust is to have some degree of protection, first for the beneficiaries and the trustee. The beneficiaries know that if there is an attack on them individually, the asset that they have in trust have a certain degree of protection. The beneficiaries also know that the trustee has limitations on what types of things the trustee can do, and when the trustee is required to make distributions and types of investments and so forth. So the trust as itself is a protected vehicle to protect the beneficiaries from third parties, to protect the beneficiaries from themselves by preserving assets, to protect the beneficiaries from estate tax, maybe income tax as well. So there are significant benefits for doing a trust as a whole. The second key critical piece is that there are states that have more protective provisions than others when dealing with the laws of protecting family members and members of the trust. And so, for example, a trust that is created in New Jersey or New York or Connecticut may not have the same protections that a trust that is created in Delaware, South Dakota, Alaska, or Nevada, which are the four typical states of asset protection that we use. There are others. Florida has become one. New Hampshire is another. Rhode Island is another of states. But the emphasis here is that these states provide an even greater degree of protection. You should also know that people have put their assets offshore as another way to protect them. Why? Because if there is a lawsuit against an individual, it makes it more difficult to collect when the assets are away from the home state. It also may mean that the courts and the judges are more inclined to favor the trust defendant versus a state that doesn't have such protection. So there is reasons why we would choose other states other than the one maybe that we use in the Northeast. We understand the value of moving the assets offshore, but generally speaking, at least our onshore clients, those that are in the U.S., we recommend that they consider keeping their assets on U.S. soil because when you move your assets offshore, there can be a temptation, or the IRS looks at this as a way that individuals and families are trying to avoid income tax. Of course, you know that your assets worldwide are subject to income tax, and so moving your money offshore does not avoid the income tax. But the government sees that when we move money outside the U.S. as a potential first step in an effort to try to avoid paying income tax. and they are not only going after trusts that are offshore and requiring they do additional disclosures, they're also holding the advisors, the lawyers, the accountants, and so forth, who make the recommendations of moving the money offshore, to have a higher standard of responsibility, maybe even liability. And our view is that we have such wonderful onshore asset protection, and that moving offshore doesn't give you any income tax benefit. Why go offshore with the additional disclosures, and why put everybody at risk that the government could go after you more completely? And we have clients who have assets in Switzerland or certain trusts around the world, and because we follow them, we see that these jurisdictions are now disclosing these accounts to the government in the states that in the countries that they live in, and it's providing for a greater degree of complexity. Where are we looking in the U.S. and what are the places that we favor? First, let's talk about what kind of trust we're speaking about here. There are two types. There is a trust that we'll create for ourselves, where today I own a Burger King, or five of them, and I'm concerned that 10 years from now, there may be lawsuits against Mad Cow, and I understand that I have insurance, I understand that maybe I have no personal liability, but I could be included as a beneficiary, as a named party, if someone gets Mad Cow disease from eating a burger that I sold, even though I bought it from my franchisee, Burger King International. So what can I do to protect some chunk of my assets? So I say, well, listen, I'll put my assets into a trust, and I will be the beneficiary of that trust. But if I get sued, those assets inside the trust are protected. I cannot do that in New Jersey. I cannot do that in Pennsylvania. I cannot do that in New York or Connecticut and Massachusetts, et cetera, because these states say that you cannot have your cake and eat it too. If you have access to the asset, then so does your creditors, okay? If you are the young kid walking down the hallway in your school and you have chains in your pocket and the bully comes after you for that money to buy for himself, if you have access to it, then the bully has access to it. If you lock it up in your locker and you can access it in your locker, then so can the bully. And so these states in this area say you cannot create a trust and be a beneficiary to yourself. Now, that means that we have to consider other states that do allow for this, and those are the four that we've just addressed, okay? The first one is Delaware. The second one is Alaska. The third is South Dakota, and the fourth is Nevada. These are the four states. So Alaska is used nationwide by people, let's say, it's such a far jurisdiction. Who's going to get in a plane and go out there if we get sued? The West Coast tends to favor Nevada because they have some very good and very recent asset protection advantages. In the Northeast and the Central areas, we see that the Northeast tends to favor Delaware because it's close. I was down at Georgetown this weekend with my daughters, and, you know, the Amtrak train stops right down the street from all the major trust banks in Delaware. South Dakota has an advantage because it handles the Midwest, but it also seems far enough away so that if you brought an action and you were from the Northeast, you may be discouraged. So it creates a chilling effect. So we choose a state that says I can create a trust and also be a beneficiary. Now, if I'm a New York resident and I have New York assets and I've created a New York trust, then the laws of New York are applicable. How do I get my trust to be in a state other than the state of New York? The way that you do that is that your trustee has to be hail from the state that is an asset-protected state. So Delaware, for example, is an asset-protected state. We have to have a Delaware trustee. Well, unfortunately for me, I have no family members or friends who have the level of sophistication that live in Delaware that can serve as the trustee. The trust home is the home of the trustee. So even if I created in New York, even if the assets theoretically are in the New York area, depending on what kind of assets, a separate discussion on a separate day, if the trustee is in Delaware, we can call it the Delaware Trust. But to since I have no connections, I have to have an institution serving as a trustee. So there are many trust companies, all the major, as we would say, obvious suspects in the New York metropolitan area have trust companies in Delaware. And equally, of the other three jurisdictions that we're talking about today, they also have trust companies residing in those states. So my trust would be one that I would create, and I would put, in my example, $5 million of my $10 million estate into a trust in Delaware with a Delaware trustee serving as my trustee for the trust. Now this is a Delaware trust, and now it is asset protecting. What do I have to pay for that? Well, I have to pay a toll every year because the Delaware trust, trustee will charge a fee. Now, there are various ways, and we'll talk about on this call, how the fees are charged. There's an elementary fee for just serving as the name on the trust to give us a home in Delaware. There are other fees where, if they're managing the assets for that trust, that they'll charge us a fee for based on the assets that are under management. And the fees are obviously material because we'll say, look, if I want to set up a trust in Delaware, but I'm not really having any benefit from it, do I want to pay significant fees? So, again, a discussion for a separate day. So the self-settled trust says, I put $5 million in it. Now, do I have access to that money in the same way that I would if I had it in my bank account down the street? The answer is no. My access to this money is only by virtue of the trustee. And the trustee is an institution in Delaware. So how do I get access? I get access to that money by virtue of the fact that that trustee says I make a request and that trustee makes a distribution based on what my other assets are and the needs that I have. At least that's the way that it is all contrived and on paper. Now, we're hopeful that that trustee is a friendly trustee. So if we put $5 million into the trust and we need $100,000 worth of income or $100,000 worth of principal, that trustee is going to make the request. And so that they follow their protocol, they'll ask us to just make the request and demonstrate why we have a need and, generally speaking, why we want to draw from the trust and why that is the appropriate place versus our other assets and why it's necessary. If the trust doesn't follow those steps, or if the trust follows the steps and says, you know what, we can't make that distribution, the way that we draft our trust is that we can always remove the trustee. And this is an essential piece. So we can, what I call forum shop or venue shop or trustee shop, to make sure that we have a trustee that favors us. It is not in the interest of the trustee to reject the request that we have, because if they do, then we won't use them going forward. We'll remove the trust. At the same point, they have to follow a certain protocol, and we want to make sure that we're all part of that that same set of facts. So we want to follow their steps. We want to know what they are ahead of time. By putting the trust into Delaware, we can have multiple benefits. And so we're still on one, but the other topics that we go through will go much more quickly. By putting the trust into Delaware, we can avoid estate tax also because we've moved the asset off of our balance sheet. And so Delaware and the other states as well say, I can give the money in trust to Delaware in trust, but the state also allows me to retain an interest and receive income. That would be what we call a completed gift. And a completed gift then means that we have pushed it officially out of our estate. Now, an incomplete gift says that we haven't moved it off our balance sheet for estate tax purposes, and it allows us some degree of flexibility and greater access, but when we die, that asset is included in our estate. So there are two issues. When we make the trust in Delaware, are we giving it away forever finally into the trust, or are we giving it in but still having a significant degree of access to it? So a key part of this is to create the trust, choose the jurisdiction, know that we have the ability to remove the trustee, and then what the protocol is for getting assets and how friendly the trustee is. Can we avoid income tax? And the answer is yes, but it's a tricky piece. So if I am the beneficiary of the income from the trust, then the income tax will be paid based on the jurisdiction I live in. So as a New Jersey resident, if I'm getting income from the trust, the income passes to me, and I pick up the income on my income tax return. If the trust does not pay me mandatory income and the trust continues to collect the income that's not distributed inside the trust, and the trust is in a jurisdiction like Delaware or Alaska where there is no income tax, then in those instances, to the extent that the trust is gaining income and it's not distributed out to beneficiaries who live in states that there is income, then the trust will have income, but there'll be no state income tax paid. I got $1 million in the trust. There's $75,000 of income in a particularly good year. None of the income is distributed out to any of the beneficiaries. So now we're in a situation where that income doesn't pay state income tax. It will always pay federal tax. There's no way to avoid that. Okay? The top jurisdictions avoid income tax for trust. So what variation, and we're on number three, is what variation is there in state legislation regarding creditors and statutes of limitations? Okay? So South Dakota and Nevada, for example, you have to prove that there's a fraudulent conveyance or an intention to hinder or delay or defraud the creditor. Okay, so this is what happens here. Delaware tends to take the most conservative approach with respect to trust, and they can afford to do that because they have a very good reputation. The state is solid. More on that topic in a minute. Other states that are trying to get you to bring their money to them will say, listen, if you've been in an accident, okay, and you move the money into a trust in our state, we are telling you that there's a possibility that that a lawsuit arising out of your accident, you may be protected against that if you're sued. If I have an accident in New Jersey, and I move the money into my wife's name or my kid's name, and then I'm sued 2 years from now, the plaintiff's lawyers and the courts would say that you have moved those assets in order to be what we call judgment proof, or that you had a conveyance, or what we call a fraudulent conveyance, where you made a transfer of these assets to avoid being attacked. So we know that we lose on that instance. Delaware takes the most conservative approach here, and Delaware's view is that if you know about this instance and there's a possibility that you're going to get sued, then really all we're going to do is any accidents or any events that take place after you've transferred the assets into trust, those instances would be protected. But if there's been an instance where you backed up onto your sidewalk on your neighborhood and grandma's going by with a, on her cell phone pushing a carriage, with groceries, and she gets hit, and that happened before you moved the money into the Delaware trust, the likelihood is that you will not be protected. So these other states, like South Dakota, like Alaska and Nevada, they're saying, look, we will argue that even though that incident happened, we may be able to protect you. And their basis for that is to say, depending on how long it was from the time that you were sued, okay, so if there was a six-month period, for example, or a two-year period, after knowing this, if you had not been sued, if you had not been on notice that you were going to be sued, there is a good possibility that that you can avoid the lawsuit. So each of those pieces is relevant, and to the extent that you have instances like this, you should know that there's no guarantee in any of these states, but you do want to consider the state that has the best laws in their effort to try to sue, to try to defend against lawsuits, if you decide that you want to set a trust up in that state. As a general rule, though, we are fans of you creating trust to protect going forward and not fans of ways to try to create a trust to protect you from bad acts that have happened before. Our goal here is to try to do asset protection and not to try to make you judgment-proof from actions that you've done, in fraudulent conveyance. So are there certain exemptions for specific types of creditors? And so this is number four on our list. such as Delaware. There are certain asset protection states, Delaware, Hawaii, and New Hampshire, who have creditor exemptions, okay, malpractice, for example, which serves to extend the statute of limitations to bring an action. These states are saying, look, you know, if you're in the state and you've moved assets into the state, then you should not be exempt from a malpractice action. Other states say things like if you're moving assets into the state trust to avoid paying support to your former spouse, child support for your children, that we will not favor this as well. And so I was in the Alaska Trust Company's office in downtown Anchorage a handful of years ago, and on their wall after the law was passed, you know, the governor's letter indicated that, you know, we certainly encourage the value of asset protection trust, and we hope that this will be a benefit and a boon to our state to have people move assets in here. But we don't want to be, you know, in support of that. We want to make clear, as we were promised, that this is not a state where we want people to move assets into the state to avoid paying their child support. And again, all of these pieces we agree with. You know, we favor completely. This is not the type of practice that we want to be involved with, or that we support anyone be involved with. So what are the standards for proving fraudulent transfers? And this is number five. And so most asset protection states require that the creditor prove that there is clear and convincing evidence that the transfer was fraudulent. That means that the burden is on the plaintiff who's trying to sue, stating that, look, your purpose was only to move the assets to avoid creditors coming after you on an incident that happened before you made the transfer. So this is important. So we have to have other reasons why, in our defense, why we created it in that state. Is it because we've learned? Years ago, we had a client that was very concerned that there may be a lawsuit. He thought the odds were low that it'd be against him, but he said, look, I'm the one with the deep pocket going forward. Let's learn a lesson from that one. And let's say, let's move forward here. The lesson is learned. I also like the fact that I can avoid estate tax and I can have assets here. I can avoid income tax. So those are all good reasons for doing it, and that has to be part of your calculation when you're moving there. It is also what the judges will look at when it comes to determining whether or not you move the assets for the primary purpose of avoiding the creditor on the incident that happened before you. Okay, so you need to always look at this and say, I may, you know, it's a shade of gray. I may not be protected against actions that happened before. I'm doing this to move forward on actions going forward. But in any event, I will try to defend my position if we do get sued on prior actions. And let, you know, let the defense lawyers and the judges determine whether or not that particular plaintiff's action will be prohibited against my trust or you know, previous success there. Okay, so we're on number six. So what role do the courts play regarding and involve in courts? So all states have statutes regarding the jurisdiction over the actions involving the trust plaintiffs in those states. So the issue here is some states, as we've talked about earlier, are more well built out on a particular topic than others. So they'll say, you know, there's a two-year period from the transfer, and if there's no action bought in that two-year period, we'll protect you for the assets you put in the trust. To get back to rolling over, you know, hitting the elderly woman with a card and being on her cell phone, and she sues. If she sues within the first 2 years, there'll be no protection. But if she sues within the third year, you will have protection. Well, in these instances, each state has their values, and we'll get back to you if you want to know more about each of the states. But you also need to know it's not just what the laws are. You need to know the level of sophistication that the judges have. So Alaska, now is not that new, but still is comparatively new to the game of asset protection. It doesn't have a 50-year history. And their judges are also new, and the lawyers who are defending the trust in those states are also new to the game of asset protection. And so you have to be somewhat concerned that if your trust is being sued in that state, you know that the judges and the lawyers are well-intentioned and that the laws they're anchoring to are also well-intentioned to protect you. But there is no guarantee that those judges and the lawyers are sophisticated enough to, they may prevail in protecting the trust, but there's no guarantee that the lawyers that are suing you from New York or the Northeast will not appeal that. And if they appeal, and the appeal goes outside of that state, when would that be? If there is a federal issue in your in their action against you. So in Alaska, several years ago, there was a case that was appealed, and it was a federal issue, and it went to the state of Washington. So now we've gone beyond the judges in Alaska, and now it's a Washington federal judge who's looking at the case, who has no skin in the game, who doesn't have Alaska lawyers, who doesn't have an Alaska resident, who doesn't have any affinity or affection or desire to protect the trust business in Alaska, and he's ruling on the basis of what he sees the facts will be. So would that happen necessarily as frequently or as easily in the state of Delaware? And the argument may be no, because Delaware has a longer history with lawyers who've had a longer history with case law that has is more built out over a period of years, and so less likely to be appealed and less likely to be overruled by a federal court that would be outside the state of Delaware. So in your calculus as to what state to choose, we also have to be respectful of the fact that lawsuits can come about and that appeals could take place potentially outside the state where the trust is among maybe potentially unfriendly or unaffectionate judges to, you know, the state where your trust is in. Okay? Number seven. Does the state require an affidavit of solvency upon the transfer of assets? So North Dakota, Nevada, South Dakota, Delaware do not require an affidavit of solvency, but other states like, for example, Alaska do. Why? Because what they don't want, for example, Alaska doesn't want to know that you've taken all your assets and you've moved them to a trust in Alaska, only to find out that you are insolvent. And insolvent meaning that you are not, you haven't filed bankruptcy, but your income, your expenses, rather your debts are greater than your assets, insolvency. And so by moving it into that state, you're trying to insulate yourself from those assets being taken away in bankruptcy and foreclosure. So again, that is not the business we're in, nor are these trusts state in that business where they're trying to insulate you from, you know, creditors who have a genuine right to foreclose on you. But ironically, states like Delaware and South Dakota and Nevada do not require that affidavit. Now, the other piece of it is that their notice periods and their fraudulent transfers are less. So if you file soon after that for bankruptcy, you wouldn't be protected anyway. So there's a gap between the time that you are solvent or insolvent and by the time that creditors come after you. So all these pieces have to be included when you decide to move your assets. Number eight, how does the rule against perpetuities affect the situs? Well, rule against perpetuities is how long can I have my trust go? And historically, the rule was that you could only have it go for your lifetime and the lifetime of your family who were alive when you created the trust, and then an additional 21 years. So I have three children. If I have $100 million in a trust, the trust in New York State can go for my lifetime, hopefully another 40 to 50 years, 40 years anyway. I have my kids who are, you know, 10 to 17, So for them, it could go another 80 years, and then 21 years beyond that. That would seem like a gargantuan amount of time. 100, you know, well, it would only to their lifetime plus 21, so maybe 120 years from now. When you have $100 million or several hundred million dollars or $1 billion, all issues, you know, for our consideration, we're doing trust. We don't want the trust to end because then our children or our grandchildren would get the assets, number one, and that would destroy the value of the trust because then they would be able to, you know, then it would no longer be protected. Number two is that once the trust ends, then the generation skipping tax-free benefits end. So you want to be in a state that says, look, as long as there's money inside the trust, I want the trust to run. And I don't want to blow my generation skipping tax exemptions, and I don't want to have the money falling to my great-grandchildren, and at 20 years old, they're 21 years old, they're getting all the money. So New York is a state that, despite some very enlightened views regarding modifying trust, does not allow for a trust to go beyond this period. New Jersey has a far more extensive period. Connecticut as well. But Delaware, South Dakota, Alaska, Nevada have a what we call a perpetuity period for hundreds of years or indefinitely. High, high periods, long, the expectation is long past when the money would have been distributed. So we don't have any issue where the children, great-grandchildren, great-great-great-grandchildren are not keeping the money in trust. So there is that value of being in a state which will not and your trust, distribute out, and then have your those beneficiaries pay estate tax going forward. Number nine, we want to discuss the observation of trustees' fees for each of the states. So you'll see in a revised draft of this setup that you can expect to pay $2,500 to $3,000 in trustee compensation to retain a trustee. The most prestigious and elite service providers could bill us $20,000 or more. That is just to give us a home. Now, that being said, the higher fee trust companies, you get much more for what you pay for. The $2,000 to $5,000 fees can often say, you know, here is a home for you. You know, we have a trust that's been around for many, many years, but your advice and consultation work is going to be done by your lawyers. And so this is an area that we have a lot of expertise, so we can help, number one. Number two is that we still, however, want to know what the local jurisdiction is saying, what the most recent legislation is taking place in Delaware and so forth. So sometimes we will also retain local counsel down there, particularly to review our documents. And sometimes the trust companies will require that as well. So we have to balance the fees. We have to see whether or not there's any complex planning or it's just a basic asset protection trust. And, we have found that Delaware has been, clearly very, very sophisticated. And the trust companies that call Delaware their home have always had a great level of knowledge and can be very effective in discussing multiple options for how the trust is created. This is not to say that there are not people who have capacity in these other states, and the fees reflect that as well. But, for example, at the end of last year, many of you who created trust, some as part of that $5 million exemption, some said, look, I want to have access to this trust. So, there was a hurry up to have the trust CITES, which is the home of the trust, set up in places like Delaware. So we may look at certain trust companies not just for, the more complex stuff, but just say we just need a home. And then we can get a fee of $2,500, $3,000, $3,500, maybe $5,000 a year to have the trust CITES there. But what a wonderful privilege it is to say I put $5 million in trust and yet I still have access to it. And that is a very, very special gift that you don't enjoy in the New York metropolitan area. We also can have the trust limited in, as we've discussed here, where they're just the investment trustee or the investment advisor, where the trustee, again, is just serving to give us a home in Delaware, but your financial advisors are still making all the investment decisions. And, of course, that's a wonderful way to have your cake and eat it, too. Pay the fee to have the trust company do the, give us a home, but then continue to have your advisors, your typical advisors, do the work. That being said, there are many sophisticated trust companies who do great work in managing assets as well, and sometimes the blended fee of managing the asset and the rate that they charge for being in this asset protection state could wind up to be compelling and attractive, and we just have to look at that, and you have to decide for yourself, you know, who it is that you want to manage the money, and we will support you 100% with that. The last piece on states that, and we talked before about New York being sophisticated in certain areas, has to do with decanting. So decanting, and you'll see this on 9C, decanting is the ability to revise the concepts of the trust and still keep the trust in place. So let's say we have a trust that is 10 years old, and you have turned out that one of the children that you've named on your trust has done phenomenally well or has passed away, and you don't like the alternate beneficiaries of that trust, or is being sued or divorcing or had a terrible accident, is now in a situation where they are only getting governmental assistance. Or there's just some other provisions that you've made in the trust that you're not happy with today. Certain states allow for decanting. The states that we are the asset protection states allow for decanting. What is decanting? Decanting is the equivalent of taking a bottle of wine, taking the cap off of it, is where it comes from, and pouring it into another vessel. That vessel takes up a different structure, but the wine has never touched the table or touched the glass or touched your lips. So the idea here is that the sanctity of the trust, which was irrevocable, continues to be that. New Jersey does not allow that. Connecticut does not allow that as by statute. But we can do work according to the common law on that. New York, on the other hand, is very specific, and there are statutes that allow for this. New York's original statute on decanting we liked more because it gave us broad powers to revise the trust. As New York gets more sophisticated in understanding about decanting, they have built out their decanting provisions to be more restrictive. And so beneficiaries all have to be noticed when you're revising the trust. They cannot be materially altered in what they were going to receive, et cetera, et cetera. The essential aspect here, though, is that New York is one of two states that allow for decanting. So we're in California right now on a trust that is a very, very well-built-out trust with large assets that we are involved with the beneficiaries in New York, and we want to decant. California does not allow decanting. So we have to work around this issue, and it may mean that we change the trust to another jurisdiction, like Nevada, which allows us to decant. Again, we don't end the trust. We modify the trust like a decanter, a beautiful new glass vessel that will hold the trust like the wine, but will not touch the outside world, and that trust is still considered valid. So if we are taking a trust in the New York, in the metropolitan area, we represent people, all of you, as you know, all over the nation, but if we're in a state that you reside that doesn't allow for decanting, then we will forum shop to choose the best jurisdiction that will give us the best decanting for our purposes and how efficient it is and what the requirements are, which are essential. So that's it for today. There are wonderful benefits of having a trust in states like the four that we've just given and others like Florida, which is making a big run in this area, New Hampshire, and so forth. And the key things here are, why are you creating the trust? Are you trying to avoid a potential suit? Are you just trying to protect those assets from third parties in the future? Do you want to have access to that trust? Do you want to modify that trust now, and that's why you're putting it in that state, or in the future? Do we have sophisticated issues that it may make sense for us to go to a state where the judges and the lawyers are more sophisticated in defending you. Also, that the trust company is more sophisticated in giving us advice with respect to what the state offers on your unique issues. All of these things have to go into the calculation. Are you price sensitive? We are always value hunters for our clients, and we treat this as if it's our own money. So we have spent a significant amount of time shopping for the greatest values in the jurisdictions we've spoken about. But we also never want to lose sight of the fact as to what states may give us